You know, this week, this one really did make headlines around the world. Yevgeny Prigozhin, the leader of the Wagner Group, presumed to be dead, Russia's air transport agency, saying that he was a passenger. And the passenger manifest had 10 people on board that private jet that came down in a fiery crash just outside of Moscow, killing everyone on board. No surprise to many, even came up in the presidential debates. You know, I thought that was interesting. The GOP debate, the first one being held with Haley coming out and saying and pointing out that this had happened, because many of the fingers around the world are squarely pointing the blame on Vladimir Putin. Many believe Prigozhin was living on borrowed time. This ever since that unsuccessful uprising against Russian forces back in June, when he not only demanded a change in Russia's military leadership, but also challenged Vladimir Putin's rationale for his war on Ukraine. So what are the repercussions? Where do we go from here? Let's bring in Orel Brown, professor of international relations and political science at the University of Toronto. Good morning, sir. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning.
One has to wonder, I guess it's accepted by most, two things, that the prime suspect is, in fact, Vladimir Putin and his regime. And second, of course, that we have the actual death, that we have that confirmed.
Yes, the suspicion definitely is that this was something that was ordered by Vladimir Putin, because Prigozhin had been an individual and Wagner had been an organization that was so important that no part of the Russian government would have enough power to make a decision to have them killed. And it was only not only Prigozhin was killed, but also his number two, Dmitry Utkin, who helped co-found the organization. So it would be very difficult for the Kremlin to shake this. We saw the spokesman for the Kremlin, Dmitry Peskov, deny that the president was involved. He said these were just lies. But then, of course, these were the same people who said that Russia was not going to invade Ukraine, that Russia had no plans to annex Ukraine, and so they have no credibility.
You know, when you come to denying it, everybody, I think if they have any common sense, even if they are in Russia and aligned with Vladimir Putin, they would have to say, obviously, this is a sign that you cannot go up against Putin and come out a winner. Is this a scare tactic? Is this something that is a reminder to anyone else, as we go on and continue with the war in Ukraine, that you better not be on the wrong side of this?
Absolutely. And many wondered whether they were within Russia or outside of Russia, why this was not done earlier, why Prigozhin was allowed to move freely, that he was allowed to even go to Africa, where his forces have been fighting in Mali, in the Central African Republic and elsewhere. And how was it that Vladimir Putin, who at the time of the rebellion, in the morning of the rebellion, had said that those engaged in it were committing treason, that they were traitors, and yet by the afternoon he had given this virtually blanket amnesty to the Wagner Group. And then several days later, in fact, he met with Prigozhin and the leaders of Wagner, and they were not punished. So it was felt that perhaps this was a sign of weakness, and now Putin was taking his revenge. The problem is that Prigozhin is not just an individual. He was not merely a dissident. He was not some opposition political leader. He was not like Boris Nemtsov, who was killed back in 2015. This is a man who led an organization that contained very highly trained ex-military people who came from some of the toughest specialized units in the Russian military, and who had a fierce loyalty towards him. And consequently, having Prigozhin killed, and as well as Dmitrykin, 2 months almost to the day since the rebellion took place, makes Vladimir Putin look not merely strong, but duplicitous. In some ways, it makes him look weak. And so even though in the short term, to many, this may be a demonstration, as you had suggested, that you cannot oppose Putin, in the longer term, it may well create a situation where not only it demonstrates the overall weakness of Putin's leadership, but you may very well have individuals who are highly capable, who have training in the military, who may seek revenge against Putin. And this is why it is conceivable that Putin, who views himself as a hunter, may at some point become the hunted.
Yeah, very interesting. With the second in command and other leaders on that one plane all going down, is this the end of Wagner? And will we see other replacements for mercenaries that might have interests in overthrowing the Russian military?
It's going to be more difficult to keep Wagner as a cohesive unit because there was already a split after the mutiny. The Russian government gave the mutineers a choice. They could join the Russian military, or they could move to Belarus, or they could move to Africa. And many of them chose not to join the military. Now, this Friday, Vladimir Putin signed a decree that all people who are in the private military, they have to also demonstrate, and they in turn have to sign a pledge of loyalty to Russia. But then Russia is run as a personal state, the sort of l'état c'est moi, basically a pledge of loyalty to Vladimir Putin. And if you have loyalty, you don't have to have people sign. And if you don't have loyalty, which clearly had been the case, signatures won't mean very much, but they could lead to further disorganization. And social scientists, justifiably, will look for models. We will look for roots in Russian philosophy, in Russian autocracy, Russian orthodoxy. But increasingly, when we look at the leadership of Vladimir Putin, the closest analog is not that of an autarkic government. It is more that of an organized crime syndicate. And I wrote about that some months ago. The Economist this past week called Russia a mafia state. And I think that provides a better explanation. In this kind of situation, the leader cannot ever afford to show weakness. And Putin showed weakness because for 2 months he couldn't do much. And at the time of the rebellion, when in the morning, basically, he had declared that these people were committing treason, that they were traitors, Putin's own military and security services, even though they did not switch sides to Prigozhin, they were not prepared to defend Putin. That march towards Moscow by Putin, by Prigozhin's forces only came to an end when Putin and Prigozhin reached a deal that was mediated by Alexander Lukashenko, the dictator of Belarus. And that, I think, demonstrated a kind of internal weakness that will be very difficult to overcome. That means that in the future, the Wagner forces are not going to be as cohesive. They will not be able to perform as well as they had. Let's not forget that they were the ones who were able to take over Bakhmut, that Yevgeny Prigozhin was an extremely brutal individual, but he did get tens of thousands of convicts from prison to fight in Ukraine. Many of them were killed or used as cannon fodder, but nonetheless, they helped break the momentum that last fall the Ukrainians had, and that is basically gone.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's interesting when you use the comparison between the mafia and loyalty. Because definitely what we're seeing here, I would imagine, is Putin really working based on loyalty. Probably Prigozhin, too, was looking at that as a key thing.
Absolutely. And that loyalty towards Prigozhin never dissipated. His forces were fiercely, fiercely loyal to him because they admired his initiative, his creativity. He was a foul-mouthed individual, but he was unafraid to speak the truth. And what he said, and he was a hero on social media weeks before the mutiny, and at the time of the mutiny, he said, you know, this is not a special operation. This is a war.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.